film at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. Tomorrow we head to Los Angeles, where we'll be at the different Lemley Theaters, and then to San Francisco this weekend to be at the Roxy in San Francisco, at the Rialto in San Rafael, and in Berkeley. You can go to democracynow.org to see all the details. This is the first week of Steal the Story, Please, the film screening around the country. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
The promise of America is freedom, equality. But right now, those pillars of our democracy are fragile. Reproductive rights, voting rights, the right to make your own choices and have your voice heard. We must act now to restore and protect these freedoms for us and for the future. We are the American Civil Liberties Union, and we are fighting in every state, every day to defend your rights. And the rights of all people.
We have got to be here. We've got to be strong to protect those rights.
For over 100 years, the ACLU has fought for everyone to have a voice and equal justice. And we will never stop. Because we, the people, means all of us. To learn more about defending our democracy, go to myaclu.org today.
You can also listen to WUSB in Stony Brook. Learn an awful lot that way. We broadcast at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday night, time for another edition of Off the Wall. Oh, yeah. And a good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes.
Yes, yes, indeed. We are here on this very warm Tuesday night.
Yeah, this is a real spring afternoon, right?
Yeah, I think it might even be a summer afternoon. It's ridiculously warm.
I went outside bare-chested today.
Did you? I didn't know you actually did that. Wow.
I actually did that.
That's what the phone calls were all about. Okay.
No, I was out, like, looking at things. I was watering some plants, and it was just so hot, I, like, put my T-shirt on my head. And,
Did you water yourself, like, slowly over the top of your head?
I was pretty close to doing that. I have a impact sprinkler I have to, like, rebuild. I don't know. It's, like, leaking. It, like, pops up, but it leaks a lot. I don't know. It's just
anyone out there can help us with this?
You don't want leaky irrigation.
No, you don't want that. You don't want that.
Water is precious.
It is. It's priceless, too.
But, yeah, I was doing some woodworking. I'm building some stuff for the studio here.
You've developed quite some skill woodworking.
Yeah, it all started, I think, with, like, some other furniture, like lifting a futon frame up and just different things like that. I just got this circular saw, and I was so afraid of that kind of power tool. I was like, oh, gosh, you know. I have to set up some ground rules for using this kind of thing. And I was, like, really torn because I didn't want to step to it because I don't know. It's a lot, you know, and I'm not an expert on it. But then it was also this, like, thing where working with that particular medium was the most economical way to, like, solve a little, like, problem with organization or some ergonomic thing. So, yeah, I have got kind of a skill. So now, like, I stain things, which is really weird. And I don't know, because it helps when you have, like, a lot of wood finish. And just to, like, put a coating on, you know. And I learned a lot from WSB, too, because there's some great engineer and staff that put things together. Just integrating everything is like, a whole skill and
a
talent.
Lot of people don't realize that WUSB doubles as a carpentry clinic. No, people are very good at building things.
Well, I admire a lot of, like, what people have done, contributed over the years. I remember the old station, the old student union, a lot of those old consoles had the same kinds of, like, furniture. I remember the wood turntable enclosure.
Yes, yes.
And it had, like, little circular cutouts of what a wood phonograph on each side. And, like, there was just such cool stuff people had done over the years because it had such history. It was there for a while. So anyway, yeah, I've definitely taken some inspiration from
that. You're building things
talents.
For the studio here.
I am.
We have some of our equipment lying on the floor, leaning against the couch, which isn't really the way, you know, a pirate station maybe, but, you know, we're better than that. And you've built something that really, it's worthy of a professional station. It really is.
Thank you. Yeah, I had some help with the measurements. I used one of those assistants, computerized things, and I adjusted my measurements. And yeah, then it's just like doing some simple cuts and stuff. You know what else? It came in handy though. I have this chair that I like sitting in too. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yes.
You know, chair, a good, you know, take a seat kind of situation.
Well, I'm familiar with that chair. I grew up with that chair. That chair must be about 40 years old at least. No, it's older than that. It's a lot older than that. Wow. It's a good chair.
So I could tell you it has the invoice for the furniture store.
Dot matrix. It's like printed in dot matrix on the bottom. It's hanging off the edge. I don't dare touch it.
Let me tell you, I basically fixed the chair because I noticed a little bit of like rickety-ness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like kind of coming loose, and I actually, in curious person that I am, shame, I know, but I flipped the thing over, took a look, and one of the little corner things is like cut at 45 degree angles to like make that 90 degree in each corner like stronger. Well, one of them was missing, and the others were kind of loose, and they just used like staples.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to scratching my head and sorted out a way to, like, fasten it, and I used a little bit of wood glue because I have, like, a gallon of wood glue. Now it's half a gallon of wood glue.
Wow.
But, so adventures in fixing furniture, that was
so
fun.
Much wood glue? Expecting trouble of some sort?
Honestly, it was $5 cheaper at the time. That's my excuse. I was just looking at it, and I was like, you know, I already have one of these little bottles. Like, why don't I just refill it? And I'll just keep it under the sink and hope it doesn't dry out.
That was
and,
smart to get it back before the before it went through the roof.
Well, with inflation and everything, I'm not feeling like that was a bad decision.
No, not at all.
I was buying in bulk for something that was kind of like a side motivation to keep me building and honing my ability to take like an idea for something. That's what I really love. And really, if you're doing something with like crafts, like building an object or something with wood, and you're doing that whole cutting and measuring thing, that rule of like measure twice, cut once, it really applies. And it takes a lot of planning and problem solving. And I really like the ability to get faster and better at thinking of something, thinking about what it would take, assembling the materials, dry fitting it, and then actually assembling it.
And then you go down to the hardware store, and you spend 45 minutes just wandering through the aisles there, being left alone, and just finding all the little tiny... There's a whole aisle with just screws.
You said you wanted to come.
3 cents each. No, I'm blown away by just the homespunness of it all. You have to go to a real hardware store. You can't go to, one of the big box stores. You got to go to a real one, with the old guys that hang out there all day long and the narrow aisles. Boy, I got to tell you, though, they sell some weird things in hardware stores.
Yeah, I like the local ones where they just have a little bit of everything.
But it's things you wouldn't even... I mean, first of all, who goes into a hardware store to buy a candy bar? But they have candy bars in the front. They have all these, KFC type theme things. I don't know what that's all about, like balloons or something. Just chew toys for dogs. I don't know. There were things there that you don't expect to find in a hardware store. I wish I could think of more examples.
I know. It's kind of like, I guess, a bodega for buildings.
Yeah.
For your home. It kind of just has everything. But, you can get stuff, good deals, and especially for particular tools and stuff at the larger stores. I know a lot of people are probably out, like, doing landscaping stuff. I've been, like I was saying, like, just tending to things because it got so warm today, and I'm still trying to get my irrigation down.
I'll bet somewhere, though, there's still a pile of snow. I'll bet there is.
No, I don't think so.
You don't
Not
think
now.
So?
No.
Anybody in the New York area, is there a pile of snow near you? There were mountains. There were mountains, and they can last into May. They can do that.
I will say the waterways look very clear. Things look very healthy.
Waterways?
Yeah, just in and around. It's very like...
The Straits of Setauket? Things are moving through
just
there?
In general, yeah. It's just a lovely time. I'm sure people are enjoying the beach and all the little tributaries and creeks.
Estuaries.
And absolutely. Yeah. Brackish zones, of course, yeah. Uh-huh.
And all the wildlife that comes with that. You got your geese, you got your swans, you got your ducks, and seagulls and sandpipers.
Yeah,
and
fauna.
Crabs and oysters and whatnot.
Flora. Yeah.
Fauna, too. A lot of fauna.
Yeah, I said that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Didn't want to leave it out. Okay, so, talking about woodworking and all that, we saw something today that's a little disturbing for woodworkers.
What?
A whole bunch of termites. A whole bunch of termites.
Oh, you're going to talk about
I'm going to talk about the termites because once a year this happens.
I think we should call it the emergence.
It's like a reawakening. You notice that they are just flying all over the place. You just see these winged insects flying all over the place. Now, in years past, we noticed them inside doing that, and it was very disturbing because, when termites are inside, that's generally something you definitely do not want. But the thing we noticed was that they only came in for that, it usually was at night. They seem to be drawn to light. They seem to be drawn to basins and bathtubs and, places where water was and places where they got trapped. And then they were gone. The next day, they were completely gone. We discovered that there were these pathways, these mud pathways that they would use to get from one place to another. Once a year, they seem to just emerge out of the forest, out of the trees, who knows. And if you can keep them from getting inside, they stay outside. And today, we noticed them. They're outside, a whole lot of them just flying into the sun. And that lasted about an hour, maybe 2 hours, and they're gone. Now, when we had them inside, all these people were saying, oh, you've got termites. You've got to call an exterminator. I wasn't convinced. I wasn't convinced that we actually had, because there was no evidence that they were doing anything. Sure, it's disturbing to have them inside, but once we figured out how to keep them from coming inside, they didn't come inside, and we didn't see them again.
Yeah, there was evidence from way long ago, like years past maybe, but none of that was active in the last couple of years, and we were pretty thorough in clearing around an area that had had it, and
We saw how they were getting in.
Cleaning up in the last time we ever saw them inside.
So, you know, I just like, you know, actual evidence that there's an infestation of termites other than the annual swarm. Because that's kind of like, you know, their Woodstock. They just have a celebration, and then they all go about their business for the rest of the year. So if you don't see them, you don't see a single one for the rest of the year. You see, people are saying, yeah, you call an exterminator and get their opinion. Okay, the problem I have with that is they're an exterminator. They're going to have an opinion to exterminate. That's what they do. Can we call somebody else that's not an exterminator that will give you, you know, a neutral opinion and say, well, you know, it doesn't look like you have termites, but keep an eye on it. That's the thing that bugs me. It's like, you know, if you consult with a surgeon, usually they say, yeah, surgery is an option here. You should consult with people who don't have a vested interest. That's just my feeling on that. We'll see. We'll see what happens. If everything collapses, then we'll know that I was wrong.
No, I think it's just minor and just a seasonal thing that we have to watch and observe. If anything changes, then maybe take more thorough action. But we've already got wicked results with like peppermint oils and other stuff.
Oh, you're talking about the carpenter ants.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
And we still have to do some pruning. We got a lot of stuff. I mean, it's kind of interesting. With the nice weather, I've been just outside more. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people, I think, are probably thinking the same thing. It's just so nice to have been inside and then be able to just spend more time. But you start looking at things and listing off little tasks and improvements and things that need attention.
You have to be careful about ticks because apparently the winter made it a better year for ticks.
I don't get that. No.
I don't understand
what is
that either.
You
think they would have all been killed off. But apparently they just went into a nice big REM sleep and stayed that way, and now they're healthier than ever and are raring to go. So if you go outside for a walk, make sure you brush yourself off when you get back. Check. Definitely wear long sleeves, tuck your pants into your socks, and just try and be careful. Don't blame the deer. It's not their fault. They just happen to be the ones that have ticks on them that move around. If it wasn't for them, then squirrels would be doing it or mice would be doing it. You know, the ticks will exist no matter what, and we just have to be aware of them and not fall victim.
Yeah, and just also... Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen any, but monitor actively, I guess, is my point.
Wild turkeys are your friend. Wild turkeys will eat all the ticks.
Yeah, absolutely. Those types of predators, and look around the sort of perimeter of your home. Mm-hmm. Those are good tips, I think, just to be aware of like what's going on, where there might be places for infestations to occur, and you know, piles of things and. But generally, I haven't seen anything yet, and that was my motivation to actually get started a little bit early with, like, okay, I'm going to clear a little of this, make a little pathway where I do want to do a little bit more stuff out in the garden so that, like, I can get through there without stepping over a bunch of stuff that's going to attract that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was like... glad to be kind of getting a jump on it, but it just makes me realize how much more there is to build and to do out there. So it's just sort of like never ending, but enjoyable.
We planted daffodils last fall. That was fun.
That's the stuff that I was watering.
Putting bulbs in the ground and then seeing them come up months later, it's starting to happen. Now, the thing is, I'm not sure if these daffodils are perennial or annual. If it's annual, I don't understand. You're supposed to put bulbs in every year? That seems like a big waste. I also notice in the forest, there are wild daffodils that are already blooming. I'd like to know how to get in on that. You know, somebody had to have planted them at some point. More of those would be good as well. Wildflowers. Yeah, you were talking about wildflowers?
That's my next thing. I want to know, like, opinions about New York native species, mm-hmm. but just like these wildflower mixes I see. Apparently you like mix it with sand and then you can spread wildflower seed. But I want to really just try to overtake some of the ground cover that I'm annoyed by. Like, we have a bunch of ferns and, like, some strange stuff, but I need some ideas on the mixes that work well in sort of semi-shady areas. There's different ones that I've been looking for, but I don't know much about it. I just love the idea of, like, a huge variety, well, and native species in particular.
We were last up in Canada, I noticed wildflowers on the side of every highway.
Yeah.
These purple-blooming flowers. Actually, I'm not sure if they're wild or if they're intentionally planted, but they look really nice. And I think we could use those on our highways as well. But I'm not sure what they are, and it's very hard to get a straight answer to that. So if anyone up there in Canada can tell us what the purple wildflowers are or purple tame flowers on the side of the highways, maybe we can plant those down here and just have a much better-looking highway system.
Yeah, that was incredible, especially seeing, didn't we see some in Texas as well? And people told us that they would gather seeds. That was something that the people were doing there, is gathering seeds from them.
Because
we saw people stopped, kind of bent over, and they seemed to be really, like, examining them. And I think we got that as an explanation.
Yeah, crowds were forming. Yeah. It was really something.
Yeah. Wow, what a cool season for colors and all that vibrance. So, but there's a lot going on.
Oh, you mean outside the garden and yeah, that's true.
The escape, yes.
We try to stay in the garden, but
escape room's over.
The original name of Off the Wall was Outside the Garden because, you know, as much as we want to stay in the garden, we always get pulled out. And we have to deal with the world. And the world has been... Okay, look, let's look at some good things, because there were plenty of good things that happened in the last week. I want to start with Artemis. That was incredible. To me, that was one of the highlights of the last few decades, as far as I'm concerned. And, Kyle, I can only imagine, since you weren't around the first time we had adventures with the moon, seeing something like that, where humans actually went out to the moon, circled it, or went around it and came back. But not only that, it was the whole landing on Friday, watching everything take place exactly when it was supposed to take place. You're hurtling towards Earth at over 20,000 miles an hour. It seems unbelievable. But that is what you accelerate to when you're approaching the planet. And to slow that down to under 20 miles an hour at the point of contact requires so much in the way of engineering and precise scientific calculation. And just to see every bit of it unfold in front of your eyes, the parachutes come out right on schedule, the helium balloons to right the capsule when it lands in the water, and just everything that went before that, all the intense planning that had to take place to keep four people alive for 10 days as they went further than anyone has ever gone from this planet before, knowingly. I mean, I don't know what aliens have done, but as far as we know, that's as far as humans have gone. I am just thrilled, and I have no patience for people who say, oh, it's a waste of money. You know, there are so many things you can say that about before you pick on the space program. Say that about every war ever fought, or any ridiculous construction projects, or just so many ways that money is wasted. But science, no, that's not one of them. Science is what makes us keep trying, keep getting inspired. And, boy, am I inspired just watching that. And I really look forward to more. More of that. Landing on the moon, establishing a colony, going to other places. I mean, it's all that. Why do you think it's there? It's not there just for us to look at and say, wow, we can never go there. I mean, nature wouldn't be that cruel to just mock us every moment with the things we can't get to. We obviously, at some point, have to evolve into spacefaring creatures. And we don't know what that means. We don't know how we'll get there. That's part of the mystery. Imagine the first person who crossed an ocean. They didn't know how they were going to do that, but they did it. They did it, and now it's no big deal. One day this will be no big deal, too. And who knows what other mysteries and solutions lie out there. But we wouldn't be human if we weren't trying to get the answers. But Kyle, I'm very curious what your impressions were, because this is something brand new for you.
Well, oh gosh, so many different kinds of feelings about it. I kind of share the support for this program and exploration in general. I understand how parts of it can be sort of delayed and costly and stuff like that, but it's an extension of the other programs and the other testing and proving that's been done on these capabilities. And I just think of all the people and work that was behind the scenes, you know, that really crunched the numbers, that tested and retested and made stuff that's this reliable. Because all those different moments you're talking about with the descent and the landing, all of that, but it's just incredible how many different things are going on and have to really run well. I thought the landing was really cool, but maybe a little cumbersome. I don't know if that's the best way to, like... I mean, maybe that is. Maybe that's the solution.
No, if you're going to go to the moon on a regular basis, you can't be hurtling to Earth 20,000 miles an hour and getting all these people to rescue you in the ocean every time. There has to be something a little better.
You have to put a lot of stuff in perspective and understand, like, this is the best we can do at this particular moment. Mm-hmm. It's all sort of evolving and built on other stuff. And I really love that. I love that they used the shuttle rocket engines for the primary or whatever launch part of SLS. And I just think the capsule's it's just pretty solid. I know there's been a lot of problems and engineering hurdles, but for what we're planning to couple it with and do with it, I think it's proving itself. And I think the contractors and like NASA's organization of all of it are getting serious, and they needed this kind of success to have like a little bit more wind at their backs with the schedule they're trying to put together and the kind of doubts you're talking about, because that's always there. But I don't know. It's going to be kind of a cool program to see evolve, especially with the sort of sunset of the space station and the other sort of competitive factors in all of it. It's definitely a cool thing to get behind. And I grew up in Jet City, you know, like an aerospace town, and, you know, now kind of neglected that engineering side a bit, and all those shops by some kind of corporate consolidation and anti-union sentiment. But I think all of that really inspired me. And when I see, like, you know, students and little kids out there with their NASA t-shirts and stuff, I'm like, yeah, you know, like, that's a good thing to be focused on and fascinated by, because that was always stuff that was in the back of my mind. As much as I pursued liberal arts and, you know, stayed a little bit away from the sciences, it was definitely something that I was, you know, had a love for and fascinated by, and the ability to fly, the ability to, you know, survive in really hostile environments like space, and
it's pretty hostile.
Be prepared for so many different eventualities, and I don't know, just the photography too, like, you know. I just
the photography, my God, the pictures they got is just simply unbelievable. And you might say, oh yeah, it's just the moon. Well, it's fascinating. It tells quite a story of history. It's all right there. There's so much we can learn from there. But you touched upon kids being enthused by this, and that alone is something that I think we need to pay strict attention to. Kids are into exploring and learning and doing things for the first time. And this, I think they're leading. They're leading us from being cynical, from being negative, and seeing something different on the horizon, literally. So you don't see that with war. You don't see that with you know, international corporations taking over everything. No, kids aren't inspired by that. They're inspired by space. They're inspired by exploration. They're inspired by big machines. So that is something that is a good sign, because it means that we're doing something different. We're learning. We're moving away from doing things the same old way.
Yeah, and there's a lot of metaphor in the level of coordination and cooperation to assemble crews and teams like this. And I think in a school environment, or in you know, when you're starting out, you have to navigate all of that. Or if you're on a sports team or something, it's similar in that communication and anticipation and, you know, looking out for one another. And that is, those are like human instincts that are universal in a lot of different scenarios. And I think these kind of projects, these hard, like, heavy lifts or tall orders, whatever you want to call it, like, they really do bring out the best of that out of people, and, you know, of any given, like, nationality or organization. And I think, I don't know, I just, I love that spirit of can do. Like, yes, yeah. We're going to go for this.
And every celestial body in our solar system has something to teach us. Every moon, every planet. We don't have to send humans there, all of them, because they're far away and they're extremely hostile. But there are lessons that we can take back from exploring every single one of those. And then that fuels us for going even further than that. Whether it be through radio waves or actually sending vessels out there. I mean, Voyager is still going. And that was sent out, my God, how many years ago was that? Decades. This is something well worth pursuing. And I hope people stay a lot more enthusiastic than they've been over the last 50 years. Yeah, we've done all kinds of things. Technology has moved ahead incredibly due to space exploration. But we didn't do enough. For it to take 50 years to go back to the moon, it's inexcusable. It really is. Let's hope that that changes.
Yeah, and there's projects of this scale that are needed in so many regards here on Earth, but also in support of projects that are off of this world. So all, like, totally within our ability, but it takes... It takes support. It takes that human spirit or American spirit that's kind of quintessential to...
Well, it is human spirit, but I think, you know, in America we at least say that we stand for being an individual, for being rebellious, for being the first to do something differently. Whether we practice that, that's really up to us. That really is up to... you know, how we steer our society. But, you know, I think it's something that we purport to stand for, so let's pursue that as much as we can.
But I always let I always admired some of those early missions, but only saw the, like, kind of color video or film of it, or black and white for, like, the moon landing and stuff. And I don't know, just the way we're capturing it and the storytelling, like, that the explorers are doing is really critical to communicating the importance of this stuff. And I don't know, that's the main thing, is that it felt like a lot of the history, the stuff that I learned about that had occurred before I was around, actually is still being carried on. So I don't know. That was, I think, some of the stuff that really hit me personally, like you'd mentioned.
Well, we're talking about kids who are inspired by the space program. But something that kids aren't inspired by, and it's the subject of a guest essay in today's New York Times, why aren't the kids out protesting against Trump? It's a very good question. Today, this is written by Thomas Edsel. Today, the United States would appear ripe for a resurgence of student activism beyond the flourishing of pro-Palestinian demonstrations on campus in 2023 and 2024 in particular. We have a president who has directly attacked the finances and the intellectual freedom of colleges and universities, is building the technology for a surveillance state, undermines free and fair elections, and took the nation into an unjustified war with no explanation while causing domestic economic havoc. But the one ingredient that's missing is a substantial anti-Trump youth movement. Why is that? The No Kings events that we talk about on this station, listen to this. At the first one, which was June of 2025, the median age at those demonstrations was 36. 36. At number two, in October, the median age went from 36 to 44. And then this year, in March, went from 44 to 48. It's getting older. What the hell? What's going on?
They're just waiting it out.
Participants in the initial No Kings Day demonstrations were predominantly white, highly educated, female, and middle-aged. All right, you know, everybody we talk to seems to be aware of what's going on. Everybody seems to be outraged at what's going on. Why is it that so few people, and yeah, even though more people have demonstrated than ever before, it is relatively few compared to the people who say they're outraged. Why do so few people show up? This is something that really isn't new, because I remember, you know, going to school at Stony Brook in the 70s and 80s, we were always frustrated by the lack of involvement of fellow students and citizens in general. People don't want to get involved. They don't want to cause a fuss or get in trouble or be seen as being too outspoken. You know, I get it. You want your life to be uncomplicated. But at some point, you do have to speak up or bad things will happen. Look around you. All these bad things are happening because not enough people spoke up in the most basic of ways, i.e. voting. And, you know, that is something that you have to take seriously. You absolutely have to show up. So maybe you're not comfortable at a demonstration, although, you know, I say to people, try it. Just you know, come by. I know in New York City there's a lot of young people that show up in the streets. And that is certainly inspirational. We can do that out here as well. And, yeah, every time we go to one of these demonstrations, they're mostly older women. I've noticed that. And it's great. Thank God they're there. But where are the rest of you? Don't tell me that, you know, cutting the grass is more important. There are so many things to be concerned about, to be involved in, to be outraged at, and it's okay to feel that. In fact, it's normal to feel that. If you don't feel that, then bad things will happen. So, you know, your presence is so important. And I just would like to hear, and people can write to us, otw@2600.com for Off the Wall. Write to us and tell us why. Why won't you come? what's keeping you away? And, yeah, I know there are some parts of the country that don't have demonstrations. I get that. But if you're within 20 miles of one, is that enough? Will you show up? Will you be a part of it? It's sad to see young people who in other countries are the ones pushing for change, to see them sit that out in what could be the most important period of their lives, you know, to see them not participate in this country when their value can be appreciated more than ever. They just have to show up. They just have to participate. So, yeah, that's something that I noticed in today's times. Was a very good question. And, well, okay. In Hungary, things did change. We talked about this last week. The parliamentary elections that took place on Sunday, Viktor Orban is out. That's right. We were talking about J.D. Vance heading over there and scolding the EU for allegedly interfering in the election while he was over there endorsing Viktor Orban. And apparently not seeing the irony of that. Well, a lot of Hungarians did see the irony in that. They did see the threat in that. They saw the threat of a leader who has been there for 16 years, getting all cozy with far right leaders like Trump and like Vladimir Putin as well. How are you friends with both of them? Well, he was, and he was pushing the country further towards Russia and away from the EU, away from democracy.
And thwarting votes left and right, a lot to do with Ukraine, but many others as well for various EU and, I guess, UN initiatives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a really bad scene. You know, it was basically, Hungary was like the Fetterman of Europe, you know. So it was a country that just blocks everything just to be difficult, you know. And it affected Ukraine. It affected Europe helping Ukraine. That's all changing now, and it's changing because people showed up, because a lot of young people showed up, a lot of old people showed up. That's how democracy works, and Hungary has shown us that. I really, really hope we're inspired by that.
Yeah, I get really kind of motivated, and I just admire when places like that that feel like they have like a young populace that's kind of been forgotten, and then they sort of emerge as a cohort of young adults with really different perspectives on the world than past generations, and you can really see it. And I mean, I felt similar attitudes in places in the Baltic states, and you know, totally, you know, different countries, of course, and different situations. But you realize like, people are growing up in a different world, and the worldviews of last century that have largely dictated the first quarter of this one, they're going away. And in many cases, for the worse, but people who are familiar with recent history and the tactics are also growing up and becoming more active and adamant and vocal about the world as they see it in their societies, and their, I guess, growing disdain or their grievances with those systems. And I think that is kind of your point from the last topic of discussion. It's just like, when will that emerge? And I think I have faith. I mean, we've seen it in really many actions. And especially during the campaign seasons when they kick up. But I think that there's a lot of growth that will occur and make itself known as a cohort, especially some that, you know, might have thought that some of this was a good idea. I hope they feel welcome to the party. You know, they're certainly invited, but I really digress, I think, or diverge in that I don't think educated voters and stuff really have to defer as much anymore.
No.
Like, this is a neato experiment for y'all, but there's a lot of people
that are dissatisfied. You had some good thoughts about this over the last week. You were talking about the guy at the end of the bar.
Yeah.
Tell us about the guy at the end of the bar and what we shouldn't be worried about.
Well, I think that there was a lot after the recent election where, and it's just quaint now, after a year and a half or whatever this is, that we were kind of like, there was this like, you know, loss, obviously people kind of in shock, you know, not really understanding like, what is this going to mean? And gearing up for, the sort of Project 2025 initiatives that occurred, you know, all of that. And there was a lot of talk about, like, well, maybe we should listen. You know, the problem is that educated voters and, I guess, coastal elites, if you want to deride them that way, but, like, educated voters somehow need to, despite whatever their issue is, wherever they're coming from, they need to defer to the guy at the end of the bar and his favorite podcast on everything because it's on trend, because this is what's been missing, because we're being told this by far right operatives, and that, you know, the youth vote, that's where it is Christian nationalism and all of that. And I don't think that that stands at all anymore. I really find that that soul searching is so quaint compared to now the actual attacks on leaders of the Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to try to explain this to people. I've had family members and people say, like, this is it. You know, you show this to people that are faithful and supportive of this regime. You're never going to get an admission of it. It's not going to go anywhere. You're not going to prove anything. As I said, they're welcome to the party, but to reconsider. But deferring because our party is too far this way, or we've been too principled, or, you know, our education platforms are not what the guy at the end of the bar likes. Well, TDB. I mean, I don't care anymore. Not if this is your solution.
Mm-hmm.
No, fair point. It's ridiculous. And there was just so much of that, like, left self-hate of, like, oh, no, we lost. Let's hate ourselves because we had any kind of principles and the other side doesn't care.
Look, there are things that one side can do better to reach people, but you can't take the blame for the other side making the wrong decision. And I think the other side is realizing that they made the wrong decision more than ever before. I mean, you know, what's happened over the past few days? Trump attacking the Pope? that's something. That's a lot.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to that yet.
I don't know how long we want to... Everyone's talking about it, so do we really want to stay there?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I went off on the, my whole theory of just basically, you know, as there's massive disenfranchisement and a lot of different plays, I'm standing my position, you know, firm in my position. Mm-hmm. And I think these matters like what's going on in Hungary are foreshadowing.
Yeah, I sure hope so. I mean, you know, we can't keep making the same mistakes over and over again. Seeing the absurdity of Trump treating the Pope as if he's a political opponent saying he's soft on crime. The Pope doesn't have to have a position, on law enforcement. He's the Pope.
Or J.D. Vance, this like paternalistic attitude that he needs to stick to morality like he's not. I mean, I don't think he comprehends what the Pope is actually saying, sadly.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I was reading about this fiery a town hall, I guess it was, for a Republican leader. This was Representative Mike Lawler, Republican of New York, who basically was at a high school on Sunday evening having a meeting with constituents, and it kind of got a little rowdy, and people were shouting and yelling and saying, you know, we had enough of this, the war in Iran, what Trump is saying and doing.
How do you take it?
Not well.
Oh.
Not well at all. And, you know, even our own representative, yeah, the esteemed Nick Nolota, who is afraid to hold any town hall meeting, has not done so yet. He had something to say about Trump's recent comments. As a Catholic and as a father whose children attend Catholic school, I believe Pope Leo XIV serves as an instrument of Christ and a successor to St. Peter, called to pursue peace among all of God's children. In a world too often marked by evil, his call for peace is both right and necessary. That peace is only possible if President Trump succeeds in preventing Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. While the president is right to be firm with Iran and resolute against our adversaries, attacking the Holy Father crosses a line. Nick Lalota has a line. Did you know that? Well, there it is. American leaders, Republican and Democrat, must speak and act clearly and forcefully about regimes that have brought and continue to plan death to America, but that is very different from how we speak about the Pope. I hope the President continues to hold the Ayatollah and clerics accountable, but lays off the Pope, whose calling is to pursue peace every day. So, Nick, basically, you know, everything is fine until it hits your religion, and then all of a sudden, it's unacceptable. Well, you know, I agree that it's wrong for the way he has been talking to, confronting, attacking the Pope. It just is really bizarre and strange. But you're just realizing this now? I mean, you know, all the warning signs. I mean, I'm speechless by all this, but I'm not surprised. I'm really not surprised. Look, you need to have town meetings as well, so you can face your constituents. You have yet to do that. I'm not talking about being on the phone with a thousand people on some kind of teleconference where everybody is muted. That's not a meeting. A meeting is people showing up, 515 Hopog Road, Suite 3B. That's your office. Yeah. And I hope people take an interest. Well, they have taken an interest. I hope you take an interest. 631-289-1097 is the phone number to call to register your interest in your representative here in Suffolk County. Because we've had enough. We've really had enough of this. It's bubbling over now. We have a crazy military situation in the Mideast that could have been avoided. And now, how do you get out of that? How do you get out of the mess that Trump has created? We have gas prices soaring. I really don't care that much about gas prices, but the economy is going into the crapper. And there's no plan. There's no plan. You didn't see this coming?
Yeah, well, gas prices, you got to realize, like, affect everything else in a petrol economy.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be apathetic about the cost of it for transportation in your particular situation, but the kinds of systems you rely on that deliver food or bring in vital goods, trucking and that kind of stuff, that stuff all counts on particular types of costs in their operational, like, business model. So it's going to hit a lot more things than just any one person filling up their tank, which are also, the people are also being robbed, you know, because of the way the prices are fixed and fluctuate.
Yeah.
It's all bad. It's quite bad.
Yeah, and I people are realizing that. People are seeing,
like,
it. And I'm not gonna say I told you so. I'm thinking I told you so. But what good does that do? We need people to wake up and realize, yeah, it's like that woman on TV filling up her car, saying, yeah, I voted for him 3 times. Apparently, I'm an idiot. She gets it, all right? I can forgive that. Now let's fix it, okay? Who hasn't screwed something up on a colossal stage at some point in their lives? Well, this is your moment. Now let's make a good moment and do something better. And it would be nice just to be able to, you know, talk to people again.
It's also much more fragile than it appears. I mean, think of the great and powerful Oz, or think of, you know, the Emperor of Nope. You know, they are themselves, or I'm not thinking of the Shakespearean equivalent. Henry VIII. I don't know the story.
Don't ask me about Shakespeare.
Especially in the face of a mass mobilization, people actually coalescing around their dissatisfaction and actually redressing those grievances in a way that Congress cannot ignore, and in other ways. And as soon as that's galvanized and reaches a threshold or a critical mass, it becomes kind of something you can't ignore, as much as that might be a tactic of your leadership style. And that's, I think, what people need to realize, is that the fear and that heavy-handedness is an effective tactic to build up in people's minds what they're up against and sort of disarm or defeat them psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about just how many people are affected and mad about all of this, like, that is a much more frightening force. And just with, like, phone calls and letters to the Congress people that should be acting as our proxies and are not. So it's unfathomable, like, the amount of power we have as the American populace. And just this guy not being cool anymore is wildly powerful.
The thing to remember is that he does not care about you. You might have thought he did. He doesn't. Look at his actions. They prove it. Now, you know, the power that Kyle alludes to, that goes for all of us. We're talking about young people and how they're not using the power that they actually have by not showing up. Well, if we all showed up, if we all used the power that we all have, this would be shut down quickly, very quickly. We would have a very different society. We would be in much better shape.
I think a way of thinking about this, and this is a little bit jargony and kind of, I guess you say, coachy, coaching and stuff like that. But what I think of is the need and the ability to show up and do that. And so much of our society is predicated on politeness and sanguine, you know, pleasantness, you know, that Rockwell image. And I think people need to get good with being unreasonable. We're way too reasonable in our society, in these town halls. You demand the action you expect from your leadership.
That's going to have to be the last word as we are out of time. Please call, or actually go to the website, WUSB.FM, and pledge whatever you can afford. And keep this radio station going so we can have conversations like this. We are going to go out with something that a giant inspired. You might have heard Ashok Bansal, a cultural icon in India, a singer whose voice you no doubt have heard, died at the age of 92. She recorded more than 12,000 songs and gained international fame by recording with artists like Boy George. And she was also the inspiration for a song by a group called Corner Shop. You might have heard Brimful of Asha. We're going to play that, but we're going to play the Fatboy Slim remix of it just to, you know, include more people than ever before. We will see you next week. Good night.
Hello. don't care about no government warning about the promotion of the civil life of the damn fair building. William Food Asher on the 45. Well, it's the William Food Asher on the 45. Everybody needs a bosom. Everybody needs a bosom for a pillow. Everybody needs a bosom. Everybody needs a bosom for a pillow. Everybody.